Let's start with the new album. Congratulations on the release. Collaborations 94 until now. What does the album mean to you, Steve?
Well, a lot for me because I'm the only one who's been in it for that long, and I'm actually the only one who's on all the tracks, so it's kind of like funny. But I'm so proud of this one. I actually think it might be, as a listen, I mean, I think it's our best album, you know. I mean, I shouldn't really say that, I guess, because it's a compilation, but it. It's just got everything you want for an album, I guess. It's got this amazing, it's got a unity of sound, which I hope that we achieve in all we do. But it's just so diverse, and all these fantastic vocalists. You know what I mean? Some of the best in their field. Iggy Pop is the original kind of punk vocalist. Stuart Lee is one of Britain's greatest comedians. Sinead O'Connor is, I think, the nearest our generation's got to Nina Simone in some ways, in the way that she's prepared to risk her career for her views, and how, attacking the Pope and all that, and then suffering for it, and then turning out to be right. Then we've got Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan, who for me may very well be the most important musician in the world, in terms of the power of Qawwali, the influence, the fact I was brought up on it and I didn't even know it, which is funny. And I think probably the most exciting music of all time is Qawwali, really. So, I mean, and that's just for starters, I mean, so, I mean, it automatically puts an album artistically quite high up there in my view, though I do say so myself, of course.
Right, that's brilliant, yeah. I was just going to say, actually, I've put it on video for the record, and you can only see me. So shall I just click on and change it to audio? Just turn the video off.
It's up to you.
Thank you.
I'm not a great tech expert at this
Yeah,
myself,
nor am I.
so
So you know what? I'm
fine.
going to leave it. I'm going to leave it in case I mess it up. I think I'll leave it for now. And going
Okay.
from yeah, going to ADF. I mean, 30 years in the business. I mean, I'm going to take you way back now. Because next year is the 30th anniversary of the Qudus Ali attack.
Of
And
the
then
oh God, yeah, of course,
that's 30 years. I mean, what is it about the ADF songs that resonate today? Because I kind of despair. It feels like we haven't moved on at all.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's that thing. It's almost like you feel that. I feel some of the songs are more relevant than they were. I'd rather they weren't, I mean, Fortress Europe. Which, I mean, I wrote that as a kind of the lyrics on that, I wrote them as a kind of science fiction prediction. Do you know what I mean? The whole, all the things about this is a 21st century exodus, and no one is illegal, and asylum is a right, but tear up the vow, all this stuff. It felt like it was very egregious at the time, And someone need to make some people needed to make a pro-immigrant song, an anti-racist pro-immigrant song. I was projecting this idea that in the future there would be all this kind of like high-tech surveillance and high-tech, incredibly repressive machinery and technology to deal with immigrants, and it would be a fight. And the weird thing was that when the opening line is 2022, a new European order, robot guards patrolling the border. And in 2022, they literally brought in robot guards, right? Robot dogs.
Wow.
Cybernetic dogs getting closer and closer. It's the opening line. They actually brought in cybernetic dogs on the US-Mexican border, right? Literally, when I said 2022 in the lyric. So, I mean, I don't think there's anything particularly paranormal or psychic about that. It's just a sort of a logical projection of where we're heading, the kind of anti-immigrant state that we've built, And so, sadly, these things have carried on. And as we saw recently, the Qudus Ali attack, the vigil for the Tower Hamlets Nine. I mean, we've seen it all come round again. You know, the recent riots in Britain by the far right, the thugs, you know. And it does seem that there is this, I don't know what you'd call it, a rump of people that have always been there, that are always ready to be incited and used most of the time against their own interests. You know what I mean? I mean, the ironic thing about, you know, the people that encourage those rioters like Farage and GB News and what have you. I mean, they're all privately educated financiers. 4 out of 5 of the Reform UK party are financiers who were educated at private schools. And they're all going on about, oh, the white working class this, the white working class that, you know. I mean, it's one of the biggest cons of all time. Anti-immigration racism is basically a con by the ruling class, you know. And unfortunately, that will never change while we still have, however mutated or different it is, or international or different in outward character, while we still have a ruling class that benefits from division. This will always be around. And so those songs will still be relevant, unfortunately.
I think I agree with you there, definitely. It's a shame that the ordinary people can't see that we have much more in common,
I mean, it's like they're being laughed at. They're being laughed at. Do you know what I mean? You know,
100%. Yes.
as if Nigel Farage, you know, he just wants tax cuts for the rich, privatisation of the NHS. You know what I mean? I mean, the ironic thing, the only thing that would reduce immigration would be a socialist economy. I mean, that's it. Basically, you raise the wages in the low-paid jobs and you have massive investment in skills and education. You think Nigel Farage is going to do that? You know what I mean?
Definitely.
I
I
don't
mean,
know. It's just it's the old easy answers, you know, divide and rule. It's cliches.
that's what it
Cliche.
is. I mean, I learned that phrase in school and it still applies today.
It's worse than ever, you know, and people, I think that there is an extra dimension to this, is that it's got worse. And though I try not to go, oh, well, you know, all the change has done it. The internet has made a big difference because there's such an avalanche of information that's very difficult to ascertain what's true and false, what is manipulated. So people tend to respond emotionally to things. People find comfort in responding emotionally and irrationally. And the internet and the tumultuous avalanche of information has encouraged that, you know, and, I think that's behind a lot of it. You know, even well, I saw Farage interviewed once and he said, oh, yeah, well, you know, Brexit was an emotional decision, right? That's not the way you make a bloody decision, you know. You
No,
know,
it's true.
you do
You've
not
got to
make massive economic political decisions based on emotion. But that's where we are. And I do feel that's why we've seen such, you know, irrational violence and whatever, you know. That's got a lot to do with it. It's difficult to know how to stop that, you know.
Definitely. When people say, like, I'm talking in general, people will listen to a song or listen to a band and they'll say, oh, I don't get it. It's a very, a phrase that's used quite a lot. What is it to get about ADF?
I don't think anyone's ever asked that, you
There
know,
you
in
go.
that. I'd have to think about that. What
That's
is it to
pretty
get Asian Dub Foundation? It's difficult for me to be objective about that. I mean, really, I'd turn it on you. I mean, what did you need to get about Asian Dub Foundation, do you think? I don't know, really. It's hard. I can tell you what we do, I guess, but how you interact that and understand that, I can't really have any control over that, you know?
For me,
We can't control how you receive the music, you know? You know,
100%. I do agree. I do agree with that. I mean, for me personally, being, born and brought up here, but obviously Indian heritage, and the having the same challenges as yourselves, I suppose. And I think that would be the having that as the common denominator is a starting point, and I think everything else just follows on from that. And
Yeah, I think so. I think from your point of view, that makes absolute sense. But when you think about the reach of Asian Dub Foundation, it really has been an international, incredibly international group. You know what I mean? And it's happened. We've touched people from every kind of background that you can imagine. You know what I mean? I mean, I have noticed in Britain, in a way, sometimes I wonder, sometimes your music reaches out to people who have a similar outlook, I guess. Certainly in Britain, when it's filtered through different cultures and different countries, that's different. But I do notice a lot of people who are involved in youth work, social work, education at all levels. I've noticed a lot of people from that kind of background do know our music and get into it. And of course, we are as non-white people, we are disproportionately represented in the lower ends of the professions, if you see what I mean. You know what I mean? Teachers and social workers.
Definitely.
And we were all from that background, John
Yes.
Panett was a worker, I was a community workshop person, as was Dr. Das. So, I suppose that's the kind of purview in some ways, some a little bit deliberate, a little bit instinctive, I guess, so I think the educational, political, social concerns of the group, right, are, they are reflected in the music and the way we put together music. Sorry, I don't know who that is. I'm gonna have to answer
Don't
that.
worry.
Is that gonna muck up your recording? It's
No, no
okay.
worries. Don't worry. It's okay.
What? Who's that? Oh, okay. Me. Yeah, all sorted. Sorry about that. I forgot my
Worry.
wife was. Yeah. Yeah, sorry. Carry on, carry on. Yeah.
No,
Yeah, so I'm.
no.
It's a great question, actually. But you see, once you get into, say, our international audience, then you really don't know how people are getting the music. Now, I know that when John Pandit went to DJ in Bosnia, funnily enough, we're talking about the track TH9. A lot of people are quite, serious people saying, "You have to play this song. You have got to play this song, right?" And John said, "No, I don't really play that. I don't have it." You know what I mean? And they said, "You have to play it because this was the song that we used to play before we went into battle against the Bosnian Serbs." So yeah, so you don't know how your music is interpreted. People put their spin on it. Do you know what I mean?
Of course, definitely each individual have their own what they take from the music, definitely. You know what? That leads in really nicely to my next question. I was watching your Music for Resistance series.
All right, yeah.
What an eye-opener. Unbelievable. I'm telling you, I mean those
Yeah, it's
your
pretty something, isn't it? The Mali one was, that'll stay with me forever,
My God, do you know what? What got me was how we live. I mean, yes, we've got our struggles here, and I think we're kind of in our own bubble. But when I watched that, I was like,
I know.
"Oh my God, people like this exist." And I mean, I know it's really bad. I think for me that I'm actually, you because you just don't. I can't even put into words sometimes. You know that when you see other people and when you see them in that situation. You know, and the music and everything they were coming out with was just incredible. And those are the kind of artists that I'm just going to digress slightly here. We have a festival here in Birmingham called Supersonic, happens every year. And those are the kind of artists that we have from different countries, completely people that, you know, that people haven't heard of, you know. I mean, this year we had the incredibly inspirational Mohammed Sifkan headline for us, and you know he's from Syria. He's a Syria refugee, and he now lives in Ireland.
Oh, I don't know him
So
actually.
you well, it reminded me of him when I was watching that. That's who I was thinking of,
Right,
and those are
yeah.
the kind of bands that we actually have on.
Well, that's great. I see, the thing is that what people don't realize in this country, living in this country, because music is so connected to lifestyle and, branding and, and all this kind of stuff, that's just the way the music industry is here. Is that in other cultures, musicians are genuine leaders. Sometimes even, leaders who put their lives on the line, like the one from Mali, the band Tinariwen. I mean, they were involved in organizing a guerrilla uprising through their music. They used songs and cassettes to get people together. I don't know if you remember, but I'm sitting there playing with the guy. That's the place where they gathered to launch an attack, right? And they were trying to get together a kind of community project. And their main challenges was persuading the parents that there would be. That there would be enough water and food for the children to come and take part, for the youth to come and take part,
I mean, I remember the Mozambique one where they're using the songs to learn about hygiene and sanitation.
Hello. How rock and roll is that, eh?
Exactly. That's
That
what we listen to over here and how we kind of, I mean, you
great.
wouldn't even, where would you even sing, no, sorry, you wouldn't sing about that, but when you look at the story and of how they're living and where they're coming from and
Yeah, that's
they have
right.
the
Yeah, I mean, there was
music for
the
the
band
band.
from the village. The band from the village was outrageous. Didn't come quite across on the. I mean, with there's a lot of talk of Afro punk now, but that was real Afro punk. He just had a guitar with three strings, and he was just strumming crazy. Going, all these girls were doing these formation dancing, and to be honest, the group was looking down on them a bit. And I was going, God, this is amazing. God, this is the real thing.
These guys,
It's
those
like,
people don't have anything, you know, they've got nothing. Like I say, we take things for granted here. We've got instruments, this,
definitely,
studios, we've got everything, and they had nothing. And those kids, Criancas de, no, sorry, Amigos dos Criancas, I mean, my God. And that song that they wrote and they were singing and performing, just unbelievable, you know, it really did. And I just found it really striking and really inspirational. And I'm telling you, you know, I think, you know, our life here, my bubble just burst. Oh, I really did.
Wow, well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I mean, it was quite an experience to make, as you can imagine.
Gosh, I think they're going back.
Going back, we did try to put together a second series, but it was quite difficult. In fact,
Of course.
I think
Well,
Al
those
Jazeera
things.
English, they liked what we did. They did their own version of the show, but with far bigger budget and stuff like that, But it was quite unique. I don't think there's been many films like that. Though, I mean, there's been quite a lot of attention about the Brazilian group we worked with. And they
Oh,
made their
yes.
own group called Favela Rising, which is phenomenal.
Gosh.
They were the real success story of all that. They really, really got things going in
Gosh.
Brazil. It's incredible. I mean, when I first went there, they were just in one favela. And then when we went back to do the series, they were in 17, right?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I know, it's incredible. And they had an old people's choir in City of God, which is where the film was based, It was like, oh man, the second trip, well, that was insane because I saw a lot of guns. I saw a lot of guns. I've never seen as many guns in my life,
Gosh.
in all kind of dimensions, I mean, it's quite something. Kids with guns, 13, 14-year-olds with guns. Also, police with sniper guns, with the guns trained on the favela. Army, to go in. You're talking about, say, if you imagine a council estate, the biggest council estate in Britain or something like that, and there's the army. The army have got sandbags and mortar guns as you're walking into the council estate. It's. But having said that, the vibe inside could be unbelievable. The vibe,
Yeah,
some of
that's what I was trying
vibe forever,
to.
right?
I mean, just watching it on the screen, it was just like, you know what? It's a serious message, and they're living in really dangerous conditions.
Yeah, I mean
And
that was a whole alternative universe. They even
I
speak their
mean,
own language. They even speak their own kind of quite distinct dialect, even language, within the favelas. I mean, one of them. One of the big one, I think that it's quite a lot in the program, is called Complexo. There's a quarter of a million people living in that,
Wow.
and it was literally made out of tarpaulin and whatever. It is a homemade place to live, and that's actually 100 years old. It's kind of, it's a different universe.
Yeah, I think it's a, again, like you say, it's a world away from how we are here and how, how music is made here and how music is made over there.
That's right. I know. Yeah. Well, I mean, it was the enormous encouragement. I mean, Afro reggae was started for kids whose parents had been killed in a police raid. That's how the band started.
Yeah.
And it grew from
Growing
there.
them,
It was
growing
one
them,
little workshop. Now it's massive. It's massive. They even get funding. I'm not sure. When we went back to set, they just negotiated getting funding from the Brazilian National Oil Company, Petrobras. Well, I wasn't sure about that, but it just to, I don't know, just to get to that level where people like that talking to you when they start so small in, the poorest and most dangerous area of Brazil. It's quite something, really. That was an issue for them, and as you'd imagine, do you
Yeah.
take funds? The way they
Interesting.
interacted with the government was always the government and corporation. Nike were trying to sell stuff to them, you know what I mean? Were trying to
Wow.
brand them.
Wow.
By this was a few years afterwards,
Yeah.
So that was a bit weird, but in a way you have to just go, well, I mean, the way you started and where you're doing this,
Yeah.
just the power and the influence you've created from literally nothing, it's
That's the thing,
incredible.
isn't it? And sometimes you've got to, although you kind of have to kind of double, sort of rethink, well, where is this money coming from and who are these corporations?
I know. Yeah.
Once
I
you do
think
that.
they rejected Nike, but it was very strange to meet representatives from Nike in the favela who were trying to do something with them. I was like, I mean, they were very uncomfortable. But that was interesting to see a project like that, just mushroom and become so well known. And the people that did it, they were incredible. They lived in the favela. They dealt with the drug trafficantes. They dealt with the favelas were run by drug trafficantes whose average lifespan was 25.
Oh my gosh.
One of the first victories that Afro Reggae had, the band that did all this, they was to prevent anyone under the age of 15 joining the gangs. Beforehand, you would start at the age of 9 or 10 in the gang,
Yeah.
and you would look out, and then you'd work your way up, and you'd be lucky if you made it past 16 or 17.
Wow.
The average, 25 years old was the life expectancy of a
Yeah, I
gang.
think, yeah, I think what it is sometimes these things are glamorized as well in movies, aren't they? Whereas what you made was an actual documentary and it was
Well, I don't know. I mean,
as.
there's only really been one film that I know of. There was a couple in Brazil, weren't there, about the favelas? But the City of God, which,
Yeah.
did kind of like make it a bit fashionable. It's
Yeah.
definitely true. You go to a
Yeah.
club in London, favela funk and what have you, But
Yeah.
I don't know whether it glamorized it. I think it
Yeah.
did focus attention.
Yeah. Gosh, that was really, I mean, truly inspiring, really. That was a great series, that was.
No, I'm glad.
Yeah. I was gonna say, is there anybody else that you'd like to collaborate with? I mean, you've done all the big names.
It's a bit hard, really, that one. Someone else asked that. I was going, hang on a minute. I don't really know. I don't really know who is there to collaborate. I think we'd probably be looking. In a way, I mean, we are collaborating with younger MCs based in London, which is what the group is all about,
Yes,
This
I
is
think
one
it's.
I was very, very happy on the third track on the album, Broken Britain, is from
Yeah.
now. It's about now, and it's with a young Asian MC called Choaman, right?
Yes.
And to me, that's as important as the rest,
Of course.
because We actually went back to where we were formed, literally exactly 30 years ago. Went back to where we were formed, did a lot of vocals with Choa and another young MC called Black Chronicle as well, we worked with. And that was really what the group was all about. That community music where we started working with young MCs. And we did what we did along. We said we encouraged the MCs to write about, reality, perhaps a bit more an objective reality, And Choa wrote, I think his lyrics on Broken Britain are phenomenal. And we actually have something done in the ADF style, which is up to date and about now, And so it was not just an exercise in nostalgia, I thought that was really important. And people are reviewing it, the reviews we've had, they seem to treat it as one of the tracks, along with all the others, which is
I did like
really
that.
important.
I did like that, but for me, with Sinead O'Connor and obviously Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan, definitely. I mean, just incredible the way, the work that you do with them and how you involve them in your recordings, and how they
Well, I
and
mean, the Sinead thing, I mean, I wrote that song, and that's very much a traditional guitar lyric song. So, so I wrote it on guitar, on a loop from John Pundit. But all the guitar parts, the chords, and the lyrics were originally going to be something very different. But then we went to an event about Zura Shah, the woman who the song's about. And I came home and wrote the lyrics after that because I was inspired by her daughter's speech, who's now a Labour MP, actually, Naz
Yes,
Shah.
Nashville,
That's right. Is she up there? Is she an MP from up there in the Midlands? Where is
No,
she? Is she
she's
Bolton?
Bolton raised, isn't she? Bolton,
Bolton.
Bradford? Bradford?
That's it.
Yeah,
And
she's up, yeah,
so,
Bradford, yeah.
and originally it was done with on the fourth album, Sonia Mato is a terrific singer. She sang on tracks like Fortress Europe. And her voice is on Thousand Mirrors. The Alap is Sonia. I originally did the demo with her. I didn't know that Sinead was going to hear this track. I had no idea. But producer Adrian Sherwood, who's one of our all-time heroes, he played it to Sinead, and she said, "I want to do the song." So that's how. So he, we I'd already we put our parts down already, and then Adrian made it a much more dubby, big soundscape. With the production, and Sinead sang it, and it's an amazing performance.
It is, I
I
love
mean,
the video
I
for
feel
it.
out of tune to myself that a song that I largely wrote and the lyrics that I wrote was sung by Sinead. I still can't get over it. I'm still,
That's just an incredible legacy, I think. What I really love about it is the video. Love the video.
I'm really glad you like the video. Everyone hated the video when it
I
came out, but
love
you look
it.
back on it now,
I love the ending. When the men are around the table and they're all clenching their fists and they're like, and she's singing, and I'm like, it's
I
really
always thought that
evident.
was a really good idea, and it actually has grown better over time. So I'm really happy to hear you say that as well, actually,
I
because
love
the
it.
band hated the video, and I
Why
think
don't?
everyone. No, I had problems with the video, but I thought the idea was basically sound, and I think over the years it's actually got a bit more because I think people can appreciate the subtlety of it a lot more. The subtlety of it and
I
how
wasn't
right
expecting
it is for the song,
it. I wasn't expecting it. I think that was it for me. And when and as the camera kind of went round, and you could see their fists on the table, and I thought, oh my God.
No, it is a great idea actually, and it
Was
was
great.
difficult making it as well. Videos have always been a little bit of a bugbear with ADF. We're such a live, I don't know, is the video always seems something that's something you have to do. Do you know what I mean? But
Yeah,
I'm really, I'm
100%.
that video has really worn well with time. And I think I have to really say to the director, you were right all along, Now I was the one that actually thought it was pretty good, but so many people disliked it at the time. But you look at it now and it really makes sense,
I loved it the first time I saw it. I thought, oh my God, it's
Did
just
you
so
see when it
relatable.
first came out? Did you see when it first came out? Only with this release.
No, I saw it with this release. I saw it with this
Right, there
release.
you
I think I
go.
saw it. I saw it. No, I think I have seen it before on YouTube, but I can't remember exactly when I saw it. And then I saw it again because I was reviewing the album. I saw it again now, as in recently. And
Yeah,
I
I
was
think a
there
lot of
and
people are seeing it for the first time, you know.
yeah, no, I absolutely loved it. And brilliant, really is. It's a great video. Kind of linking to a question sort of before about what do you get about ADF. If ADF was a color, what would you be?
If we were, what colour?
A color, what would you be?
Colour. The first thing that springs to mind is black, really.
Oh my gosh, I love black. Yes, I wear black all the time. I think God, you all wear black,
I
don't
think black and khaki, I guess. I always conceived of it as kind of a musical guerrilla army type vibe, you know what I
Oh
mean?
God, yes.
Yeah, so I'd
Definitely.
say, you
Yeah.
know, black balaclavas and khaki, you know?
Yeah, that's quite good.
Yeah, but maybe with some scarves and Naxalite scarves, you know? Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
Indian
that'd be cool.
scarves.
Yes,
Yeah.
that'd be cool, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you've done some incredible albums and music over the years, and that in itself is an incredible legacy. Is there something else that you'd like to do? What else is there? And what else can we expect from ADF?
Oh, that's a different. I am. You see, the thing is, you know, I mean, we've done a lot of stuff. I mean, there was the whole live soundtracks, you know, that I kind of accidentally forced on the group, but we managed to do it. Like the Lahain thing, we're still doing it 25 years later. You know what I mean? It's incredible.
Yeah.
Battle of Algiers, and you know, all kinds of different things we've done. You know, we've done things with dancers. We've done things with. I must admit, I need new ideas to push this thing on, really.
Oh.
I don't want to drown in a
Yes.
well of nostalgia, which is why
Yeah.
the new track is so important. You know, I'm
Yeah.
hoping that we put together another album which does take some different tacks, you know what I mean? And
Yeah.
also involves some younger people as well, you know, to
Definitely.
keep that whole workshop community thing going.
Yes.
Because, you know, I don't think the band does its best if it's just doing a predictable circuit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand that definitely. I think with
Yeah. And
ADF
so
though, because you've got
I
so many because you've had so many experiences, I think over the years, there'll be something that you can work with, I think.
Well, no, we have, but you know, I have to be honest, it's quite difficult to find the way to reshape the whole thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's Especially, you
Well,
know.
maybe not reshaping, just sort of doing, taking it sort of on a different path, you know, of
Well,
what
that would be
ADF as it
reshaping,
is. Yeah.
I guess. Yeah. But
And
yeah, no,
ADF
it's an
as it
interesting
is.
question.
Yeah.
We've had all this, we have 30 years of all this. And
Yes.
really, the compilation is brilliant because it's actually, you know, we've worked with some incredible singers, vocalists, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And instrumentalists, you know. It only scratches, if we talk about the whole 30 years experience, it only scratches the surface, you know. Whereas, like the live soundtrack stuff is a very big part of it. Of course, you know, the albums, you know, the things that we kicked off, and some of the live gigs we did, like with Chittagong drummers from Bangladesh, or you know, doing Lahain at David Bowie's Meltdown, all this kind of thing. You know,
Yeah.
it's almost, it's like there's a book in there. You know what I mean? An illustrated
Definitely.
coffee table 500-page long book, I guess.
Yeah, maybe that's next. Maybe that's next, Steve.
Yeah, that's almost like, yeah. And I think right now, I think it's an open question as to what we do next, which is interesting in itself, I guess.
So that's interesting in itself because you never know, you know, what opportunities may just land in your lap.
I mean, so many great ideas do happen by kind of happenstance. I mean, the Stuart Lee track was,
Yeah.
I did that purely for my own entertainment. We had this
Yeah.
backing track. Didn't have a vocal. And then I'd been to see Stuart down at a festival. Then I remembered the Coming Over Here sketch. And I matched it up to the track we had and never thought it was even remotely possible that anything would happen with it, do you know what I mean? But that one really went off, you know, and I don't know, it was certainly the most powerful thing we'd done for a long time because it really, really did address something contemporary, you know. We had
Yeah.
that campaign to get it to number one on the day Brexit happened, you know, all that kind of thing. You know, it was powerful. It was important. You know, it meant something. And you see, it's very easy to coast along, you know, and forget. And you know, you just play the gigs, and you just, you know, everyone likes it, goes home. But you realize there's ADF has to be more than that. It has to be. Otherwise, if it doesn't have something to say about now, or a music to reflect, to pass comment, either cerebrally or viscerally, you know, in terms of the sound of the music, doing something different with the music, or you know, the lyrical concerns, then I don't think it really works unless it's got that going for it. You know, there have been times and over the career where that bit has been kind of like not sidelined as such, but considered less important than the actual industry side. You know what I mean? And
Definitely.
I think the compilation, the thing we did with Stuart Lee, the coming over here, and the new track on the album from the Young MC, we've still managed to keep that, you know, in an industry which is really militates against it, you know, militates against the ideology, the politics, the social concerns, you know. So I think the question is whether how you keep that at the forefront of what we do.
I think it's because that's it's kind of your essence, isn't it? And so
I think so, yeah.
I
I
think
really think so.
that's not going to be
I think
lost.
that now, more than I have done for many years. You know what I mean? I really think right now, that's right at the forefront of what the group is. And
100%.
so, you know, and that's very important to me, certainly.
Well done. What can I say? Steve, it's been brilliant. Thank you for giving us your time.
Absolute pleasure.
I'm going to try and sort of hopefully get this together and have it on the Original Rock website as soon as I can.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. That's a really
Is
great interview. So, yeah.
there something you want to, a message that you'd quickly like to say to our viewers and listeners?
No, thank you for all the support, and thank you for the warm reception to the new album. And we'll see you all very soon, I hope.
Yes, let's hope so. Definitely got to
Yeah.
come to an ADF gig. Definitely.
All right. All right. You take care now.
Awesome. Take care. Thank you so much, Steve.
Pleasure. All
Bye
right.
bye.
Bye-bye.